You're listening to the So You Can Relate podcast.
Wow. Hey, guys. Welcome back to the So You Can Relate podcast. I am Adefala.
And it's your gal, Joy.
It's been a while.
Oh, it's been a while.
How long has it been exactly? Maybe like 2 months?
Yeah. Okay, so we did release an episode at the end of April, but coming in to record, it's been like 2 months. And I've missed recording so much.
Me too. There's been so many random things that have happened in the past couple months that I've been like, well, we could talk about this on the podcast. But we haven't. But tell them why. Where have we been exactly? What's with the break?
The break. Your girl has been going through it, guys. So as I feel like I've mentioned it on the pod before, but basically I'm in law school and I was fighting for my life. That's the the only way to put it. Like literally, I had exams, dissertation, all of that. I'm low-key still going through the latter end of it, but the bulk of it is done. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I was just so overwhelmed and I just needed to hone in on that. And yeah, so that's why I've been gone, you know. And I just said to Devla, girl, I can't do it no more.
I said, it's okay. I actually do like a break. And the thing is, we took a break around this time last year. Do you remember? We did the, we did the IG live. And then we had a break like for the month of May because I had exams this time last year as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, a break is good because if you just keep going, then you're going to get tired.
Exactly, a breaks are needed.
Yeah.
And it just makes you reflect on like why you love doing what you're doing.
So why do you love podcasting?
Oh my gosh. First of all, I love podcasting with Adefa. Like I can't imagine doing it with anyone else.
Honestly.
Absolutely love it. And I just love a place to I love conversation. Yeah. And I love a place to just have all my thoughts and sometimes I'll listen back and be like, what was I even talking about?
Same.
So I enjoy it so much. I just love talking and so it's a perfect thing to do, right?
Yeah, same for me. Like sometimes I just want to like press record on my phone when I'm at home talking to myself.
Yeah.
Because I'm in constant conversation with myself. I don't know about you, but I talk to myself as if I'm in conversation to the point where sometimes in public I have to put my AirPods in so you think I'm on so you think I'm on the phone because I just love to talk. So to have a space to just do that is fun. And I have seen a lot of podcasts land in the past few months. I feel like it's been more directed towards men, so I don't really take any responsibility.
Yeah, exactly.
For that. But there is something funny about this day and age. Anybody can just like pick up a mic and just start giving their opinion on something like that. So mm-hmm. I guess you do have to be careful in terms of like what you listen to. But I feel like we're good.
Yeah, I hope we are. I hope you guys are enjoying it. But what was I going to say? Talking of like loving to have conversations and all of that, I saw a TikTok and it was basically saying how, you know, people find journaling really hard.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy was recommending that you just film yourself and talk for like 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And there's this girl who had a video and she was basically saying every birthday, I think, she writes a letter to herself and she like will film a video and be like, oh, this time next year, I'm hoping to do this have this. And I feel like recording yourself and like documenting yourself is really, really good.
I'm an advocate for that. I've been doing that. I think I started that when I was like in maybe year 11.
Yeah.
I started recording videos like on my way home from school or like just random videos in my room or on my laptop or stuff like that. And it's just like it's weird to kind of watch yourself back and to kind of connect with yourself in that way. And I have found it really helpful because sometimes I don't really feel like writing, but to watch a video and see, oh, I look like this time last year or here's the thing that was on my mind this time last year and I can see on my face how much it was troubling me. And then later down the line, you realize it's not like affecting you anymore. It just, I don't know, it makes you feel, it kind of grounds you with yourself.
Yeah, for sure.
And I like the opportunity and I feel like more people should do that.
So how have you been, Defila?
I've been working. You know, I never thought I'd get to a place where I'm actually just working all the time. Like I heard, you know, you leave uni that you get a job, but then you but I didn't think that I'd be that person that's actually doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I knew I'd be employed, I knew I was going to have an income, but I didn't accept the fact that I was going to be there every day doing it,
every single day. And obviously, I'm newsflash. I got a job, guys. Glory.
I love it.
And right now, obviously, I haven't started yet. I'm starting soon. But my thinking is that, oh my, my evenings, I'm just going to go out for dinners and, you know, spend time with friends and stuff. But the reality is, you're tired and you need to get up the next morning really early, and it's like you're living from weekend to weekend.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the reality of that?
I don't like it, especially because of where I live now. I moved in February, so I live like the furthest away from London than I ever have. And it's expensive going in every day. It's tiring. And something's always got to give. Like, my diet right now is atrocious. It's never been this bad. I don't even know if I should say what I've been eating, but it's either noodles or chips.
Oh my gosh, the go-to.
It's so basic and unhealthy.
Yeah.
Because you have to balance, like, okay, you work and then you socialize with your friends and then you have your faith with God. And then you have, are you eating healthy? And then you have, how is your relationship with your family? Mm-hmm. And then you have, oh, are you fit? Like, are you going to the gym? And then you have, oh, what are the things you're pursuing outside of your job? How am I supposed to balance them all at the same time?
It's so much.
It's not possible. So something's got to give. And many things have given, including my diet.
Yeah.
That's given. My energy has definitely given as well. It's like I wake up early and then I make the commute into work on the days that I'm going in. And then I work for the whole day. And then I go home and I get home around like, maybe like 7:38 if I manage to go to the gym. And then I don't have any time to make a lunch for tomorrow because I'm exhausted.
Exactly.
So then I go to work. I go to bed, wake up again the next day and I do the same thing. And then I'm also buying lunch. So that's also an expense because mm-hmm. I haven't prepared any food. And it's just like, I feel like a hamster on a wheel. But we spend a lot of our childhood just gagging to be that hamster.
Exactly.
I have to stay grateful, and I am grateful for like where I work, and I'm grateful for like the opportunities that I know are available to me. But it is kind of hard to see how much of your life is taken over by work, and it makes me think that it has to be meaningful. At the same time, I do see the value of just treating your job like it's your job. I do see the value of not getting too emotionally invested in it, not giving all of your energy to it as well, because I think having a full life outside of work is more important in general,
mm-hmm.
especially if your job is something that doesn't really deal with people's welfare. I don't know if that's bad to say.
Yeah.
But it's like you have to try your hardest to make your life outside of work quite full. And even in the past week or so, like, I've definitely been thinking maybe I can find a lot more meaning outside of it in terms of my creative endeavors, rather than incorporating my creativity into my 9-to-5, because I don't want the joy to get sucked out of that, if that makes any sense.
Right, yeah.
So I've been thinking about that too, like, what is it that you want? Do you want to write for a corporation? Do you want to write for an organization? Or do you want to write for yourself? Like, do you want to just be writing inside of work and outside of work, and sometimes you get paid for it, but there's pressure on it because it's your job?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want to write as and when, and for every time you produce something, it's from your heart, rather than just giving information because something bad has happened on the other side of the world. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So trying to find that balance, all of these adult, like, early 20s things that I was warned about, I'm literally going through them at the same time.
Some of us were not even warned. We just, like, you know, went in blind. But no, I totally relate to that. And for me, one thing that I've been struggling with, because obviously a lot of the people around me are in full-time work, and so their weekends are completely free. But I've been studying, and it's kind of like, when you're studying, it's like you don't have no free time. Like, every time there's a weekend, you just think, okay, I could be revising, I could be doing my dissert work, I could be applying to jobs. Like, I can't express to you, even in this time that I've been away, it's just been a whirlwind of work and applying to jobs. Can we talk about applying to jobs? Is humbling. No response. Not even, unfortunately, you have been unsuccessful, like, no response, don't hear back from them type of vibe. And so juggling all of that has been super, super hard. And I feel like my social life has taken a hit because I just don't have the time. And then you have that guilt of, oh, I could be doing something. And I'm so aware that, like, this is my last phase of education. And I'm like, I don't want to come so far to fail. And it's like, because it's kind of been a mantra, I don't want to come so far to fail, I don't want to fail now. I just can't give up now.
Yeah, because we can't.
No.
But I think a rebuttal to that mindset you have is the rest of that song, which says, he's not going to bring you this far just to leave you. So it's like, oh, I can't come this far to fail, but it's fine. I won't fail because God isn't going to leave me and bring me this far to leave me. So even if I get to a point where it's like, okay, like I've come so far, but I'm about to let go. Maybe you do need to let go because that's when God's really going to come through for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And it's interesting as well because we do spend a lot of our lives like pursuing a certain thing. And I appreciate that some people don't actually have that. A lot of people don't know what they want to do with their lives. And everybody around them says, I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a journalist. I want to be a doctor. I want to be this. I want to be that. And some people just literally don't know. But I think for in terms of just heavily desiring anything in your life, I think it's really important when you just kind of say, you know what, if I don't get it, I'll still be okay. And being able to find contentment in the possibility of not acquiring this thing, because I feel like sometimes that's when you realize how much you really want it. And maybe that's when God steps in and shows you what you actually should be pursuing. You know,
I feel like that's a lesson I've learned doing like the course that I'm doing. If I don't get it, will I be okay? More of a question, actually.
Honestly, like, I don't know much about law, but I think you will be okay. I've never really seen you as the kind of person that would, oh, Joyce failed law school and now she's just not working in law. Like, I think you'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you'll be absolutely fine. And sometimes it's easier for people to say that because they don't know your situation. They don't know how much you procrastinated last week. They don't know how many TikToks you watched last night.
Yeah,
you should have been revising. So some people, like, project their expectations of you onto you.
But the way I am, and maybe this is toxic, I know people don't like failure, but I cannot stand failure.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, like for me, it's literally like a kick in the face. I cannot stand failure. And so the thought of being in that position, and I've tasted failure, like, you know, I've had my fair share of failure.
Yeah.
I know how it feels. And I know that process of picking yourself back up. And I feel like that's really, I think the biggest thing I've learned is picking yourself up.
It's hard.
It's hard, but it's necessary. And I think that whenever I do fail at something, I don't feel like, oh my God, this is it. And I'm just going to stay on the ground because, you know, everything's falling apart. I will find a way to get up and I'll get up. And even if it means it takes me longer to get there, mm-hmm. that's fine. But I'm going to get there.
Indeed.
Rather late than never.
Yeah. You do hear loads of things about like failure and like being scared to fail and everything like that. And I had the same fizz last year. And I think I did speak about it around the time when I failed one of my exams, and I failed the easiest exam on the whole course, by the way.
Yeah.
Like I had two exams that day, and the one that I was scared of failing was the harder one, but I failed the easy one. But I didn't die. And then I resat it and I passed it and I was like, oh, okay. Like, I don't know, sometimes it actually takes faith in that thing for you to realise it's not that deep.
It's not that deep. And I used to, when I was younger, find failure so embarrassing. Like,
yeah.
I would never, ever admit to anyone that, even to say that I'm finding something hard, I would just see it as a weakness. And I was just so set on appearing strong and coming across strong and all of that. So that used to be an issue for me. But even now, like, I had a reset that I had to do, have to do. How I wish it was already done. And I was just telling everyone, I'm not gonna lie to you, I was like, look, you need to understand my position. I can't come out for drinks because I'm quite strict on myself. I feel like I don't deserve to enjoy.
Oh, we need to talk about that.
You know? Because I'm like, I'm here because of, how do I put it? Even though I put in as much work as I could at the time, I'm here because what I did wasn't enough.
I get it.
And so I don't need, like, I was supposed to be going to Afro Nation. I'm no longer going to Afro Nation.
Really?
Yeah, because I just feel like I don't deserve it. And
what,
so
are you
gonna
do with the ticket?
Oh, I sold it. Like, someone luckily like took my place. Oh. But I just feel like I cannot be on a beach singing, my guys, and I'm not with you, babe. Like, I can't. I just wouldn't even enjoy myself. Yeah. But one thing I am looking forward to is I feel like once, by God's grace, I pass everything and I get my degree, it's going to be that much sweeter because this one has been hard. And I think just going in a bit on my time, I think what's made it harder is really I haven't had as much of a support network as I did in undergrad. In undergrad, like, I just knew so many people.
Yeah.
They might not necessarily have been in my course, but it was like that social bubble I was in, and it's like everybody's in it at the same time, struggling at the same time.
Yeah.
But me, there's been a lot of isolation.
Yeah.
I'm in this season that no one around me is in, to be fair.
Yeah.
Because I made acquaintances at law school, but not like really great friends. And all my friends that are really close to me outside of law school are working. Mm. You'll be surprised how quickly people forget. Like, you're like, why? You're just being a ball. Why didn't you come out? Last year, were you not in exam season shaking and crying? But now you've forgotten all too quickly. And yeah. I always say this to people. I cannot wait to get to a position where I'm just like, best of luck on your exam. I've been there. We've all been there.
We have.
You know, I can't wait. But for now.
As for the whole, you don't have the support network. I do understand that because literally up until a time like now for you, education has been very communal and very supportive. Mm-hmm. You know, you're in class with friends from in like secondary school and primary school, people who are really shaping you because you're so impressionable, teachers that are literally there in your armpit telling you exactly what to do and like supporting you and everything like that. And then when you get to uni, you still have that vibe, but somewhere like law school or just masters in general as well, like just branching into any kind of education as an adult, it's just different. You're way more likely to be surrounded by people who have defined themselves as much as you've defined yourself, which has led to a difference in personality, a difference in understanding between these people. And you can't always expect to find a course bestie. Sometimes it's just not going to be there. And it's going to be a bit harder for you to feel comfortable in terms of having this communal, all in this together kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's just how the cookie crumbles sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and initially it was a shock for me because I'm social, like I don't really struggle to meet people and you know, speak to people and make friends and stuff like that, but it was like, yeah, it was just a different experience to me. And I think I've learned a lot in this year.
This reminds me of like I think it was last week, right? It was either earlier this week or last week, but I missed the bus on my way to work, right?
Yeah.
And if you know where I live, missing that bus is no joke.
Oh, no.
It's really inconsistent. It's expensive. So I missed the bus. I said, okay, it's fine. I'm going to call an Uber. But I called the Uber on the way to the bus stop. So when the Uber got to the destination, it was at the place where I called it. So now I had to walk all the way.
Oh, no, yeah.
Meanwhile, I had a train to catch that was like coming soon, like at the station, like a 10, 15 minute drive away. So I was now trying to locate the guy in the Uber. He was driving around on the phone to me. Oh. I was trying to locate him or whatever. And then he finally found me. We got in the Uber and then I got to the train station. And then when I got there, I had to run up the train station. I'm going to think about me. I hate running for transport. Like it makes me feel pathetic. I don't know what it is.
If you miss it, the shame is like no other.
It's demoralizing. And then I sat down on the train so breathless, but it was kind of packed. I couldn't even breathe too hard. I had to, like, you know, those shaky breaths.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're trying to hold it in.
I was holding my gym bag because I
wanted to go to the gym
after work. Anyways, I say that to say I wrote something down when I was there because I didn't feel like ending my life, which is great. Like sometimes something like that happens and you just, it's like the last straw.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I'm so annoyed right now. I literally don't even want to breathe air. But I didn't go in that direction. Yeah. I went in a more positive direction. And I wrote it down because maybe you can relate to this. I said, I don't mind all the struggle and the frustration right now. I know what I'm destined for makes it worth it. And it's all part of my story. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, like, you know, when you hear people that are successful talking about, oh yeah, I used to work in McDonald's or I used to do these shifts. You know, there was one time where this person did me dirty or whatever, but look at me now. And sometimes I think to myself, me running for that train today, me locating that Uber today, me missing that bus today, in a while, I'll just be telling the story and it's just going to be like a building block towards, I don't know, the success that I'll be living in that point. And even the success that I'm in right now on my way to like a dream internship that I'm doing, like the building blocks for things that I was doing a few months ago, you know?
Right.
So every time something like this happens, like it feels discouraging, or every time I have to tell my friends, oh, I can't do it because I live far, or you say, no, I can't because I have to revise for this or whatever. It's like, it's just all part of your story. And you read books and you hear about people's life stories. Nothing is always on a steady incline up. It's like a heartbeat monitor thing where it goes up and down, you know. It's always going to be like that. So whenever I think of it, I'm like, there's calms in life and there are storms in life. right now this could just be a storm, but I know there's going to be a calm that's going to come, and I'm going to appreciate that calm even more because I know there's a storm around the corner.
Exactly.
You know, that's a better way to look at it, I think.
No, I totally agree. Like, I think I always say, like, I have no problem with humble beginnings.
Yeah.
Like, even some of the decisions I've made, people be like, are you crazy? Like, why don't you take a break? Or why don't you go for something that maybe you're going to earn way more money? But because I know, like, I just have a vision and I know what I need, I would rather put myself in a position where I'm earning less, but I'm in the field I want to be in, than be in an absolutely different field. I'm earning more, but then I'm hitting a ceiling because it's like, I can't really progress in this, and it's not even what I wanted in the first place. So I'm really mindful of not wanting to be like solely money driven.
Yeah.
And I was getting money driven. I think I mentioned it on an episode. I can't remember. But it was like at the beginning of law school, and I was just like Googling, like, you know, all these different, because I was kind of, okay, I had an idea of what type of law I wanted to get into, but I was kind of researching other areas and stuff. And I was just seeing the money. I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And I came back to Earth and I was like, no, Drace, like, you need to do this because of the reason you got into it in the first place. And I'm not going to be a commercial law babe. It's never been my interest. And I don't want money to be what drives me to go down that route.
Is commercial law the one that pays you a lot of money?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So going into like business law, property law, that type of thing is really good money. So anyone out there that wants to get into that, you gotta make some money. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like the wages for journalists are much lower than people expect. Because it's like, unless you're like literally a news anchor or like a really established journalist with your own, like, your own thing going on in the world, how much can you really pay somebody to tell you what's going on in the world? Like, less than you would expect, actually.
Yeah.
I literally hear people being like, oh, here's my 100k salary. And I'm like, it's unfathomable to me.
100k, yeah. I see those on social media a lot as well. Yeah,
not in my industry, I'll tell you that. Unless you're literally a news anchor hosting the show, you're almost giving you 100k.
100k, you know?
Yeah.
Ah, what would I do with that money? Only God knows.
I'm telling you. But yeah, I think something that I wanted to go back to is what you mentioned earlier about feeling like you don't deserve anything. And it reminds me of the episode that will never be heard by our listeners, the one that we recorded.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. And that was lost the files, guys.
That was meant to be our last and most recent episode, but whatever. But we spoke about self-compassion, right? And around that time, my eyes had been opened to the possibility of self-compassion.
Yeah.
Because I realized how little I had for myself. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that can be down to your upbringing and I don't know, you being held to high standards by like your parents or your teachers or the people around you as you're growing up. And as you grow up, you start to internalize that and you become your biggest critic. And I think a lot of us say, oh, yeah, I'm my biggest critic, but I think that's not the case for everyone. I think some of us are like disproportionately criticizing ourselves in ways that are just so unfair. Mm-hmm. And you don't really understand that until someone says you're being hard on yourself. And you don't even process that possibility because you're like, no, because if I don't be hard on myself, then I'm not going to be successful. That kind of thing. But yeah, I think with the whole feeling like you don't deserve thing, for a very long time, I was saying that nobody in this world deserves anything. And to be fair, I will still stick beside that. only in terms of, I just feel like there's a danger when we decide that someone deserves something and someone doesn't deserve something else. It's just humans dictating what other humans receive and give. Mm-hmm. And I think it can become very dangerous. I think there's just things that you get and things that you don't get, and that's it. So much rage comes from a certain group of people saying that this thing deserves this, and when it's not given, then there's riots and protests or whatever. But anyway, that aside, I do feel like sometimes we withhold joy from ourselves and we withhold praise from ourselves and like a pat on the back from ourselves because we feel like we don't deserve it. And if we fall down, we kick ourselves more than anybody in this world would.
Oh, yeah.
More than you would even kick down like your best friend or like your sibling or whatever, just because you know you can do better, you know. And we take this tough love approach to ourselves, but there's actually a love approach that you can take that can make you just as successful as this tough love that you're standing on, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you will dwell so much on your failures. Like, it will take you, well, for me, it takes me almost weeks to get over it. Like, I'm just constantly thinking, oh my God, What did I do wrong? How could I be in this position? Oh my goodness. Yeah. But let a great thing happen to me, I will love it for all of 2 hours.
That's it. You know what I mean? You get 2 hours.
I even
have
to remind myself and be like, Joyce, remember, like, be happy about this. Like, this happened to you. Like, like, I'm happy.
What, you know? what is it with that? Like, there is this thing called negativity bias, right? And it's like negative, bad things seem so much more exaggerated in your eyes than any good thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's why things like depression and anxiety are so crippling, because your mind just exacerbates this thing. Your mind and it makes you feel like it's the end of the world. Meanwhile, so many other good things are happening in your life, but you've lost so much perspective that it's just easier to focus on the negative. But it's very, very damaging. But I think it's also quite human. So you have to be a lot more like intentional of telling yourself, oh, this is a good thing. Like, yeah, I can celebrate. Oh, yeah, I can do this. But it's also very tiring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I hear that. You know who motivates me out there? Kim Kardashian. I'll tell you that.
Get like, she's work.
Literally been doing the bar. I think she passed on the third attempt.
Oh, really?
And I just thought it was so sweet, because she literally documents it on her show, like failing at the first time, failing at the second time. And then I think it's the third that she passed. And to, like, obviously she was scared. And I think the third is the last chance. If you fail it, then you can't continue with law school, whatever.
Oh, wow.
Like, yeah, how it works there. And I was so happy for her.
That's crazy, you know, because I only remember, I don't even know that she passed. I just remember everyone laughing when she failed the first time.
Yeah, exactly. So she passed that thing, and you know, to all the haters out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just goes to show that, like, you just keep going, you keep trying, and people do not understand. I don't know in other areas of life, but for me, I can speak on like academics. It's so hard to pick yourself back up and go to the drawing board. Remember, you spent weeks on end revising for this and giving it 100% to find out that you failed and then have to go back. It's humbling.
Yeah.
It's so humbling to have to go back again and, you know, go through that again and do it again. Like, you didn't do it the first time. Like, I'm telling you. And then to do a third. Oh, Lord. So, yeah, I really take my hat off to people that keep going and trying again and again and again, because it pays off. And at the end of the day, no one's going to call you and be like, okay, some people might be like, oh, it was the third attempt. It was the third attempt that you passed. But we're both in the same position. We're both sipping the same coffee and we're both in the same office now. So,
yeah, I do always try to think that the opinions of people that criticize you are the opinions that you should value the least, because... Well, not even the opinions, the people that you should value the least. I'm so sorry. Like, to hold in high esteem a negative opinion towards yourself is literally the worst way that you can live. Like, say you failed 3 times and now somebody is laughing at you because you failed 3 times. That person should be the least important person in your life.
Yeah.
Like, I have all the opinions to hear and to listen to and to let dictate my life. That should be the least of them. And also, it just speaks a lot on people's character as well. It's like, why should I allow myself to be affected by someone who thinks it's okay to laugh at me for failing 3 times?
Yeah, you're the exact type of person I don't even want to listen to.
Yeah, exactly. And I think things like that just really identify the kind of person you shouldn't be around. And that goes for many things in life, like even say if dating, for example, I think a good example to use is hair, especially for black women, right? So you're seeing somebody and you have your, I don't know, you have your wig or you have your braids or whatever, and they're fine towards you. And then you have your hair out one day and the personality just switches up. And then they communicate to you, oh, I'm not really a fan of the hair. That's your cue to leave, because you don't want to be with someone.
I got you now. So you're in a relationship with a guy.
Relationship or dating or just anything.
Yeah. And the person you're dating basically says to you, now that your natural hair's out, I don't like you anymore, basically.
Yeah. So, but I think...
Oh, my
And
God.
I think what we do sometimes is we... I'm not saying that's an extreme, but also it literally is
it happens
extreme.
Though. Or you'll notice they're treating you a bit differently.
And he's not opening the door anymore. he's not paying like he used to.
No,
I think that's your cue to go. Rather than us bending and putting the wig back on, or rather
imagine
than us
that.
Braiding
and
the
you
hair.
Know what? You'll be surprised. I feel like there's people that can relate to that.
That's the point. That's what I'm saying. So the same thing goes for people that are criticizing you. Rather than allowing this projection of your failure and this repetition of you failed to just go off your back like water off a duck's back, you're now telling yourself, oh, I failed. Rather than you to completely devalue this person and just be like, goodbye, I passed. But as a matter of fact, you're now kind of allowing yourself to be crippled by this negativity coming from a corner in your life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So rather than like basically ignoring the negativity, we step into it. Rather than saying, okay, I don't want to date you anymore because you don't accept me in all states, you put your wig back on.
You put your wig back on quickly.
Nothing wrong with that thing. Nothing wrong with the wig. But it's like there are so many situations in our life where we just kind of bend and we comply to negativity rather than being like, this is the exact indication of what I don't need to be around.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you without your wig, without your makeup and all of that, that's really the real you.
Exactly.
And when all is said and done, and if you guys are going for the long haul,
mm-hmm.
that is what the person's going to be exposed to all the time. The real you. So if the real you is you know, an issue for them, hit the rocks then.
And it applies to obviously not just dating but all situations in life. Like if you ever find yourself trying to change to fit into something, maybe you don't need to change. Maybe you need to go and find something that is going to welcome you. You don't even feel like you have to fit in. You just belong there.
Yeah,
rather than shape-shifting because you like this thing so much or you value this person so much, I'm now so willing to break my back and bend over backwards. So you finally say, oh, I love your braids, babe. No, I'm sorry.
I hear it.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's like, you know, people that do things like that, it's unbelievable. Because, like, taking it back to the whole hair thing, me wearing my natural hair is not a failure.
Oh, it's definitely not.
It's me.
I was even thinking this morning, it's like a lot of people see natural hair as a statement. They see it as a movement, which I get, because when you see like an afro, sometimes you think black power. You think Black Panthers, yeah, because obviously they all had their hair like that back then. I've seen pictures of people like black women in like rooms around the Black Panther movement or whatever, and they've all got their hair out, and it was just like the norm back then. Mm-hmm. Right now, I don't think you're really going to ever see that again. But it's like you label something like natural hair as a movement and as a political statement and as a scene of defiance, whereas it's actually just that is the default. Like, this is literally how it comes out of me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I just don't feel like straightening it. I don't feel like putting a wig on. Yeah. So I'm just going to come out the way I am.
Mm-hmm.
But you're so right. It's like people will automatically put you in a box, see you a certain way, you know, because you've just chosen to be who you are.
I think there's a lot of that going on nowadays, you know, like, have you seen things on TikTok like, I'm in my villain era?
Yeah, I've heard about that. What is that?
It's just weird. It's just, I hate to say Gen Z, but it is really just Gen Z. And like, it's ironic because we're definitely a generation that's...
What is a villain era, though? Like, if you could explain.
It's just being a menace to society because, like, I'm so tired of everyone taking the piss out of me. Now
so
I'm
you're
just
going to
be a bad girl. But it's all on TikTok. Like, you're not bad. You're still going to run for the bus.
Keep on being the bad girl.
you're still going to do the non-bad girl things you were doing yesterday. You just made a TikTok looking all cute and now you're still in your villain era. Like, it doesn't really do anything. It doesn't mean anything. It hardly comes across in your life. If you dictate yourself as a villain in society, you will be treated as one, by the way. You're not going to be having a good time. But it's funny because our generation is so on this whole wave of, I don't want to put myself in a box. I don't want to be defined in a singular way. Like, everyone is so different. We're all so complex and special. And at the same time, we're very much adhering to boxes and definitions because they're being sold to us in a way that's quite desirable. And I think a good example of that is the clean girl aesthetic. Did you hear about that?
Mm-mm.
It's basically slick bun, whatever your race is, just slick your hair back however you can, slick it back.
Slick that thing.
Clean makeup, as in no cut crease.
Okay.
Hardly any lip liner, a bit of mascara, a bit of bronzer. If you can use tint moisturizer, use that.
Mm-hmm.
But just look like you could have rolled out of bed like that if you were that beautiful. Right. I look clean. Nice neutral colors, just looking.
I got you now.
Normal, but like, I hate to say, but like pretty normal.
Yeah.
Not as in like, yeah, pretty normal, like beautiful normal, if you get what I mean. And everybody was now on this whole clean girl aesthetic thing, or like there was also the black woman in luxury thing as well, or like old money, which is problematic because old money definitely just indicates exploitation. Well, that aside, but it's like everybody was like on this whole clean girl aesthetic thing, or like, oh, now I'm going to do Pilates because Lori Hive was doing Pilates and stuff like that. And it's like we're really putting ourselves into boxes as a people who are so angry with boxes, but because they're sold as errors, which is a lot more extended than like error sounds a lot more infinite than a box, right?
Yeah.
We don't realize that we're still adhering to something because we're putting effort into fitting into this aesthetic. Do you get what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just really been frustrating when people like say, oh, the so-and-so girls do this, or the so-and-so girls do that. With black women, it's the same. Like, oh, it's the wig lashes girls do this, the natural girls do that, the diversity girls do that. The diversity are the girls that date white men. That's what they do. That's what they call them, diversity. Right. Like, putting everybody in boxes.
Yeah.
And everyone is now, like, subscribing to these boxes and saying, I'm trying to be the kind of girl that does this. I want to be that girl. I want to be this it girl. It's like, you're putting yourself in a box more than you can ever imagine.
And then you'll see, like, I see loads of stuff on socials where people are split between two boxes. So you'll see them be like, I love this aesthetic of, like, Lauryn Hill vibe with, like, the dreads and, you know, the afros and that. But then I love this, like, clean girl aesthetic.
It's like,
girl,
do both. You
feel like you must choose.
I saw another tweet earlier this week.
Yeah.
And somebody was like, oh, this person must have been 16. By the way, guys, we need to remember, not every tweet is tweeted by a responsible 25-year-old. Yeah. There are preteens on Twitter who are getting the information from TikToks that are made by idiots across the world.
Yeah.
And they're doing threads on, here's how to do this. Like, they just learned it and the information isn't even correct. But anyway, that aside, I'm pretty sure it was a person like that was saying, I kind of want to be feminine, but sometimes I feel like I want to be masculine too and I'm confused. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was thinking, just be yourself.
Just be yourself. Like, it's as simple as that, but it really is just what it is.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because there's a lot of confusion in the world, right? And because of confusion, we try to create definitions to understand something objectively. But the danger with that is now with people thinking they can only adhere to one thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, we see this thing as feminine and we see this thing as masculine, just to create an understanding of what it is that we're looking at. But now, because those things can be defined, we feel like we can only pick one of them. Mm-hmm. And we don't realize that things aren't always, like, mutually exclusive and some things can coexist. I don't know. I find it kind of worrying, especially because there's just so much access to information now. Everything is very, like, defined and put into a box and, like, packaged to you, and you can only pick one.
Yeah, you can only pick one. And what happens if you don't fit in one? Long day now.
I mean, it shouldn't be. You should just realize that you can be both and just keep living your life.
You can be whoever you want to be.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's so much information flying around nowadays. But I think there always has been. But I think the danger now is the access that we have to all of it.
Yeah, it's so easy to access now. And when I think back to, like, being 15, like 16, I was just so... I felt like I was so sure of myself at the time. But looking back, I was really confused.
I don't know what was going on in my mind back then. Because I was clueless. What was I doing?
The other day I was in Harrow Shopping Centre, and I remember I went there for my 15th to watch Where the Mill Is. Have you watched Where the Mill Is?
No, but I remember, like, trailers and stuff.
It was actually a really good movie. And I remember the whole day I was, like, we had gone to, like, Pizza Express or something, and we were trying to figure out for the life of us, because I'm a September baby, so I'm, like, the oldest in my year, how we're gonna sneak into this 15 movie. And I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, that's so, like, okay, it's not innocent because it's bad, but I mean, like, that's just my main priority, was sneaking into movies, like, at that time. It's so crazy how things change.
But I
remember that day I literally went with my friend to go sneak in, and they didn't let us in. And mind you, me and my friend definitely looked the oldest. And then our other friends that were petite got us in. It's crazy.
It's just crazy how life changes, and you look back and you realise how few problems you kind of had back then.
100%. Oh, man.
That video was hilarious. But afterwards, I had to be like, but they should seek help.
Because they need help immediately.
Tell me why Joyce sent me this video. What made it funnier was the music.
Yeah.
And then, you know, do you listen to Kendrick Lamar?
No.
So he has his album that he dropped recently, and there's a song in it called We Cry Together. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a boyfriend, a girlfriend, I'm guessing, whatever, just having a really intense argument, but it sounds like so good and it's very poetic or whatever. But basically, at the end of the video that I'm talking about now, they played the intro to we cried
no
together.
Way, do they?
Like literally like 1 second, 1 or 2 seconds of it, but it just made it even funnier because this woman was in her car, right? I think it started off with him like taking things out the boot or something like that.
Yeah.
And obviously we didn't know what was going on. And then he just about closes the boot. Does she try to reverse into him?
Literally, she tries to drive into him and kill this man. And what made it so funny for me is, as soon as, so he manages to get away and run off, and she literally drives the car into the wall on the main street.
Yeah.
And then he screams, like, as if to say, are you okay? Like, crazy people, like, you lot are arguing so bad. And then, but you don't want her to die or, like, get, like, injured.
Yeah.
It was like, oh my God, are you okay? Runs back to her, and she tries to run back into him again.
Again.
Talk about intent.
She crushed her car into that building twice. Crazy. She could have died. Imagine killing yourself trying to kill somebody else.
It's not a good look.
And then in the end, he tried to run away from her.
Yeah.
And she still caught him.
I don't know what level of crazy they're on. They have to be Americans.
The adrenaline that must have been in her body to drive your car into a car twice and still chase a man and grab him.
I don't know what he did to her, but my gosh. She said, I'm going to kill you today.
And the worst part was, like, he could have run away while she was in the car. But he was tormenting her. Like, he was still, like, flying around the car. Like,
there's people like that in life. Yeah. Do you want this person to kill you? They've shown you warning signs, but you're sticking around. They're literally driving their car into you.
I don't know. I guess it's the adrenaline. That's that passionate love.
Love. If that's love, I don't want it.
Madness. That was hilarious.
How can you even explain that to your friends? Oh yeah, basically last week, Thursday, me and my boyfriend tried to kill each other on the road, but we're still standing. And then that's how they'll come and tell you, we're getting back together. You dare have an issue with it.
Yeah.
You know that TikTok that goes, step, step, side to side. Yeah. Like me and my best friend's wedding after saying, you need to leave this guy. Oh my gosh.
I think it was you though. You said at some point you do feel like, like when it comes to someone, your friend's relationship, for example, you're only going to give them advice based on their context and like based on what the information they've given you and the choices they've said they're not going to change, if that makes any sense. It's like, okay, since you've decided to stay with this person who you shouldn't be with, by the way, but since you decided to stay with them, here's the advice I'm going to give you. My ultimate advice would be get the hell out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But since you've said, no, I like it here, well, is what you should do since you like it there so much.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, I have friends like that, and it gets to a point where you just feel irritated because you can literally see this person taking them on a ride and just taking advantage of them, and they can't, I feel like they even can see it, but they don't care. And it's that mad love, like that love that would literally lead you to madness.
Yeah.
And I try to stop talking about it, stop talking about their relationship, and just remove that from our friendship, because I just feel like there's only so much quality advice I can give you, and then you're just staying in it and you're making up your own mind anyway, so let's not bother to discuss it.
Yeah,
you know, because you never want to see your friend getting hurt and being in a bad position, but then I feel like that normally affects the relationship because now the person feels like they can't really be genuine and be honest with you, because maybe you've called them and they're in a bad mood and it's about the relationship, but you don't want to hear it. And it's now like, okay, am I going to be fake on the phone for half an hour?
I guess you just have to be on your friend's side and at like the wider
issue. So we should all be mad together.
You know what? Maybe that's what you have to do.
Or one of those phone calls where you just,
Oh my gosh, really?
Mad.
One thing I've tried to do is put in like almost like a bullet point list. Here are the things I'm not really a fan of, and just like reiterate it every now and then so that you can't say to me that I never said anything about how I truly felt.
It's those people that you have advised them. They'll finally see the light and be like, how could you lot not tell me that this guy was crazy?
Mm.
Which words did you want me to use?
Well, when you're in it, you're in it.
No, come on. Give us a break. Don't get me wrong. Like, I have been that person whereby when I get upset about something, like, I can really be in my head about it and be like, be thinking 1,000 things at the same time. Yeah. But then it reaches a point where it's like, stop telling your friends if you know that you're just going to make the crazy decision you're going to make. You know, and people say this all the time, you will forgive your person easily, but the people you've told probably not so easily. And people do not forget things.
That's a big worry that I have sometimes, because people that are in relation, or people that are in relationships that I'm close to, I can't forget about when he aired you for 3 weeks with a dead excuse, and then everything was fine again, and then something else happened. Like, your friends are a lot more is the word pragmatic. Like, they're Your friends are going to forget the things that you're going to forget, because you're like this
They
person.
Don't have these rose-tinted glasses, yeah. And they don't even have the context you have. Maybe you knew that he just got a new role and he's really, really tired from work and all these... It reminds me of that song, I'm your girl, don't you know that you... And then Kelly says, see what y'all don't know about him. I said, can't let him go because he needs me. Uh-huh. And he's really getting stressed from his job and I am making it easy.
I didn't even know that was a line in that song.
Literally, it's talking about how he's stressed at his job and, you know, you're blaming yourself and you're like, you know what, I've kind of been on him and I've kind of been requiring so much of him that he can't give. And your friends are just like, no, it's not that. Like, he's just being a bad boyfriend. Or she's just being a bad girlfriend.
Well, I think at that point, that's when the grace starts with you, isn't it? You have to decide who you're going to love unconditionally, because I don't love your boyfriend unconditionally. He's not my boyfriend. Mm-hmm. So you can't keep expecting grace-filled advice from people who aren't in your relationship, because they haven't made that commitment to that person. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it kind of goes both ways. Like, you should give advice knowing that it might not be taken because you're not in love with this individual. And you shouldn't seek grace-filled advice from people who aren't in the relationship with you.
Yeah. And I think, especially when it comes to... You see, when it comes to relationships and people making reckless decisions, we've talked about this before, like how sometimes we feel like we're always making the right decisions and we're always on the straight and narrow.
Yeah.
Sometimes, I guess when you're in your early 20s, you just want to make a reckless decision or two.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure.
And you don't want no one to... Can we just go on? Let's go on the other side.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm telling you as a friend, I don't really want you to give me that great advice. I just want to laugh.
I want you to laugh.
I just want you to laugh with me and pretend like you didn't tell me 2 weeks ago to stop this.
Yeah.
And let's just move along.
Yeah. I do love a bit of reckless behaviour. I've been so involved in such recently in the moment.
What would happen
despite
if
what I just said? It's fun though. There's just something so fun about it.
Yeah.
Something so fun about being mindless. And, you know, maybe it's better to be mindless with no expectations of anything fruitful than it is to be mindless and hopeless and hopeful at the same time.
Yeah. I hear you about reckless behavior, but I feel like within reason. Yeah. And within limits. Like, you never want to be looking crazy out here.
Mm.
All because of recklessness.
Yeah, I think we laugh at it a lot nowadays. Like, it's just like a joke, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh yeah, I went back. But it's like, no, you went back to something abusive. I like me going back to the 10th time after my friends told me not to. But it's like, no, but you're traumatized. It's like we look past the genuine, like, negative side effects of things. All in the name of recklessness. I get you. That's where you draw the line.
It's totally where you draw the line, man.
Yeah.
I'm going to read this tweet that I sent to you a while back, yeah? This is what it says. It says, oh, not me losing the tweet. It says, my spouse becoming a pastor is enough grounds for separation.
Oh,
that's not what I signed up for. I will never sign up for that. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The devil has said, damn.
Jeez.
What do you think about that?
I think if when I was younger, I would have been like, why wouldn't you want to marry a pastor?
Really? Is that what you thought when you were younger?
I literally told my mum that I want to be a pastor's wife.
Oh, that's sexy.
What the hell? When I was a child.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, of course. Like, isn't that the best? Because then, you know, what could go wrong? That kind of thing. Obviously, I was the child, so I didn't know that anybody, you know, madness doesn't discriminate. Anyone can turn out to be crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I get the approach in terms of, you know, a lot of your life is where you love me.
It's because I can imagine someone be like, God has called me to the ministry. Well, here are the divorce papers. Oh my goodness.
It's intense to say it. Like,
obviously, it's a joke, like, but yeah.
It's not all bad. I mean, it depends on the ministry, doesn't it? It depends on how immersed your spouse is in the ministry.
I think it's in the context of your spouse is, he's not becoming an assistant pastor. He's not a pastor of the youth ministry. He is starting his own church. It's going to be called Tabernacle Ministries.
I'm going to stick beside him. That's not me. But
say how you really feel, girl.
Some would. If I'm
how what would you do? let's go deeper, Defila. What would you do?
Okay, you have to give me context. Like, did I already know that he was on this vibe before?
No. Let's say you met this guy, and you're both Christians. You're really intentional in your faith and stuff like that. But he never ever mentioned becoming a pastor, and you never saw him becoming a pastor. But he was really active in the church. He was involved in ministry and whatever. And then, 5 years into your marriage, he said, look,
5 years.
You're pregnant with your second child, by the way. Mm. And he's like, look, babe, God's called me to become a pastor.
I was stuck beside him. Unfortunately. I think it's very ironic to divorce someone because they want to follow God.
But, okay, divorce is quite a lot. Would you present the options and be like, this is how this is going to affect us? Have you really thought about it? Would you kind of like almost discourage it? Or would you be like, you know, at the end of the day, like the greatest gift we could give is to serve God's people?
I think as I stand right now, I would discourage it. But I think if I get married, it would be because I'm a mature person who sees the value of such things. And I married a person who doesn't just make decisions based on what they want to do, you know? So yeah, I'd like to believe that if he's saying I need to start a church, it's because God told him to, and who am I to stand in the way of God and some people's salvation? So unfortunately, I would have to stick beside him. But as it stands today, I don't know. I guess I just like attention. And for it to be divided somewhere. I mean, your attention can easily be divided between me and your job, or me and any other endeavor that you have outside of obviously our relationship. But ministry is something else altogether.
Yeah, it really is. I agree. Obviously, I wouldn't divorce the person, but I think I'll just be really shocked. Yeah. And probably stay in a state of, because I think what people don't realize is for the other spouse, it's basically you being forced into ministry too. Even if you don't want to be a pastor or you don't want to be involved in any leadership, you kind of are thrusted into that position, and your children also are. Mm. So it's really, really very much so a sacrifice. And it's not an easy thing.
It's not an easy
thing. Hats off to all the pastors out there, you know. Yeah. God bless you. Thank you for the work of the ministry.
When I was younger, in my church, they would plant churches regularly.
Really?
Yeah, RCCG, they plant churches on their, the mandate for RCCG is to have an RCCG church within 5 minutes walking distance.
You're joking.
All over the world, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure there's an RCCG in most countries of the world. Probably not like North Korea and places like that. But
do you think there's one in Uganda?
Oh, of course.
Really?
Yes.
I'm going to have to Google that. RCCG Uganda.
Plenty.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
If there's an RCCG anywhere, it's Africa at the absolute least. They are everywhere. They want them to be 5 minutes walking distance.
You're right. There is one.
Of course there is.
You didn't even doubt it for a second. Oh my gosh. There's actually a national headquarters in Uganda for RCCG.
Oh yeah. I mean, they're successful, aren't they?
This is so cool.
They said, we're going to plant some churches. And they've been planting them. So when I was growing up, deacons and deaconesses, they would get sent out on a regular to plant churches. And it wasn't always because God called them, like, oh, God said, I need to start a church, pastor, so I'm going to go and plant a church. It was the pastor saying, you're next.
Don't you think that's dangerous?
Yes. Of course it's dangerous. I don't approve of it.
Yeah, no.
As in, okay, I have to go start a church. I have to find a keyboard and a drum and then find people to play it and force my children to do technical section
by force.
I have to now do evangelism to get people to come every Saturday or every Sunday.
I definitely feel like it should be viewed as a call, and to just do it because you, I don't even know if convenience is the word, but you know, sometimes people do things because they can. And it's better to do something because you should,
of course.
So yeah, that definitely makes things complicated. But can you just, I imagine you could just say no.
Yeah, you could say no, but they prefer for you to say yes.
It's not a good look.
Because once again, how dare you stand in the possibility of someone's salvation? That kind of thing. You know, like, we're called to be fishers of men, blah, blah, blah. This is just part of the mission. So for you to say no, it comes across kind of selfish, and you know, you better have good reasons for saying no for that kind of thing. You know, there's been a lot of talk recently, people saying that missionary work is like colonization.
Yeah, I remember when I was studying the British Empire and we're basically learning about how the British invaded Africa, and they did it through like missionary work initially. I do imagine that there were people that genuinely were missionaries, and I hate to take away from that by saying that every single one of them had political agendas, but I think at the time the British government realized that, oh, these people actually have a lot of influence, let's use this, and they perverted it for their own use. So you see images of like a person coming with a Bible in one hand and a gun behind them and stuff like that, which is it's really sad when you think about it. So I remember mentioning to a friend in the history class, and I was like, oh my God, I'd like totally want to book, like, go on a mission trip and stuff like that. Like, you know, when I finish undergrad, and the way they looked at me, like, you want to be a colonizer, basically.
Yeah.
And it just had like it negative undertones to it. But yeah, literally a lot of missionaries that did that.
Yeah. Modern day, conversations now about missionary work that I've been exposed to, you also have to realize it's hard to speak on things nowadays without remembering that this is what you've seen. Like, you're not always exposed to the other side of this argument. But a lot of what I've been exposed to nowadays is being like, people should stop traveling across the world and spreading the gospel.
That has to be a demonic message. So we should stop preaching the gospel to the Chinese army.
Stop traveling the world to preach the gospel to a group of people who you are so sure need it from you, from London or whatever. The only thing that I will say about that I do kind of understand is that I think Christians always feel like, okay, we are called. Yeah, we're called. But are you always called to Thailand? Or are you called to your next door neighbor? Are you called to your community around you? Mm-hmm. Are you called to your workplace? I think this idea that those people out there need to hear my message, or my the message through my lips, me as a vessel, that kind of thing, really overlooks like community. Do you know what I mean? So I do get it from that approach. It's like, what is it that's so novel about traveling the world? Because obviously the disciples, they went from north, east, south, west or whatever. But I think there are still so many people in your backyard who are in as much need of God as someone across the world.
Especially here in the UK, like, oh my goodness, if any people group need to hear the gospel, it's people in the UK. Like, it's people know of Jesus, of course, like a lot of people know that Jesus was a man that existed, but very few people actually understand the gospel, what it means. And so, yeah, like, I totally agree. I think you have to be as committed to your local community as you say you are to go into Thailand preach the gospel, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it's fun. I feel like people do it because it's a chance to kind of get away from their normality. And sometimes when you're away from what you know, what you're used to, you allow yourself to change because your environment has already changed around you. So why not change altogether?
Yeah.
When it's close to home, I guess, I don't know why people are not as enthusiastic when it's close to home.
It's just less novel. And I think people just, it's because it's an environment that you're used to as well. It is just less exciting for you to go stand outside that bridge leading to Westfield Stratford. And
that famous bridge.
The way I walked past that crowd.
I did not play when it, like, I'm so sorry. Evangelism aside. You know when someone's just stopping you to talk about knife crime or something like that? Like, these issues are so important, don't get me wrong, but you're in a rush. I do not give any eye contact first of all. You know, my mom is the worst when it comes to that. Oh my goodness. Someone will be talking about Sky and she has Sky at home and she will stop. So anything she will stop for. I literally one time went to the shopping centre with my mum and she stopped for something to do with like the Heart Foundation. I kid you not, I came out of shopping. I must have been shopping for an hour. Came back outside. My mum was still talking to this individual. By the time I got there, she found out that he was a student. He had graduated with a 2-1 and he was, you know, so happy about his... And I was just thinking, why are you doing up life stories?
I'm gonna lie, those people need people like your mum because they've got people like you walking past them.
Oh my gosh. I just was like, release her, release her.
Oh. I always feel sorry for those people, but mostly the charity ones.
Yeah.
Not the ones, not Sky Broadband.
They'd be the most aggressive ones. excuse me. Oh my goodness.
Like in Westfield, these perfume hand cream people were trying to stop you with the free massages, all of that stuff. I don't feel as sorry for them, but I do feel bad walking past like a little like homeless charity and I'm like, no, I've got to get to work, that kind of thing. I feel like I should stop.
Got to get to work and make this money.
I feel like maybe I should stop more, but like you said, it's always at the most inconvenient time.
Yeah.
Like you're hardly ever just strolling down the street, just so ready and available for someone to stop you.
You don't want to stop. Like, you don't want to have that awkward conversation. Oh, where are you headed to? Oh, you know. Yeah. But you're right. I think, like, another thing, I'm really bad at, like, talking to Uber drivers. It's like, I just think it's awkward.
Yeah.
I don't have much to say. Apparently, like, they want to do this thing on Uber where you can, like, opt for a silent drive.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Are you good at talking to Uber drivers?
It depends on the driver. It depends on their vibe. Like, I've gotten a lot of Ubers recently, and all of the Uber drivers I've had are just quiet. Like,
whatever. Yeah, I get that too.
Sit down, get out. Like, I don't even say anything. I think the most talkative one I had was one like last year. I went to like the hangout at someone's house, and I left at, I don't know, early in the morning. So when I left his house, I had Uber waiting for me outside, and then he was like, oh, this is a nice area. And I said, yeah, I've never been here before. You know, it's really nice. And I was tired as well. And then he started talking about, oh, what are you doing here, whatever, blah blah blah. Then I told him, oh, I'm a journalist, etc, etc. He was saying, oh, my daughter loves journalism, just like talk a bit. It was actually really, really nice.
Yeah.
And then I fell asleep, which was extremely dangerous because it was like 3 in the morning.
Not 3 in the morning.
Yeah. And then I woke up and he was like, oh, we're here. I was thinking, wow, you really could have gone left. Yeah. Anyway, that side, he was really friendly, but that's like the extent of...
It's the things you have to think about. Like, it's annoying that you have to think about that as well. Like, even one time I remember getting back late and I just, you know, when you're just looking around and you're actually fidgeting and shaking for your key because you're like, oh my gosh, like, it's not a good feeling.
There's a lot of things that women have to go through that men just don't really consider. Like, being outside by yourself at night, you're immediately alert. It's like you go into like your most, dare I say, your most primal state.
Like, you're aware of everything around you.
Hyper aware. Sometimes I do that thing where if someone's walking behind me, I'll slow down so they can pass me and I can walk behind them.
So you can be aware of what they're doing,
things like that.
Exactly. I totally get you.
Yeah.
I totally get you on that.
And also having things, well, I don't have any of this, but things like a rape alarm or pepper spray and things like that. I think pepper spray is illegal, isn't it?
Is it?
I think so. I think someone told me that pepper spray was illegal. But, you know, like holding your keys.
Yeah.
What was it called? In between every finger and things like that too. It's terrifying.
Attack at any point. Not all men, some men, because you know people. Some men do that. Some men will literally plan their whole lives around you without having consulted you. And I think that is the most disrespectful thing.
Just like, wow, so how do men see relationships? Not even consciously, but subconsciously. How do they see women? And how much is that perception affecting their approach to a woman in terms of, do you just want to own this shiny thing so that nobody else can have it so you can say it's yours? Or do you like me as a person? Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
I'll never forget, I think it was the first episode of Girlfriends, or one of the first episodes, or maybe just an episode or whatever. Joan was dating this guy. It wasn't the first episode, but she was dating this guy and they were going out, like the group of them were going out that night, and she was wearing an outfit And then he was like, oh no, I wanted you to wear the dress I bought you so I can show you off.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know, like, it just made me unhappy to you know, to watch that scene. Because I was thinking...
Okay, I'm so sorry. I know people love the show Girlfriends so much, but I feel like Girlfriends is... What annoys me about Girlfriends, it's just only about relationships. Oh, my yeah, goodness. 100%. Like, there's so much more to like. That's why I like Insecure, because Insecure does focus on relationships, but it has regard to the fact that life is more than just relationships. Like, we see Issa's career progression, and we see how relationships with it deals a lot with friendships and stuff like that. Whereas Girlfriends is just like, oh, I'm with this guy, we're not together no more. Oh, I'm with this guy. Oh, we didn't make it now. I'm crying on my girlfriend's shoulder. Oh, I'm at and you guys.
I think we're tired of relationship discourse, ironically, that we're talking about it right now. But we're tired of it because we're so exposed to it every day. Do you ever just go on Twitter and you're getting relationship advice or TikTok?
Oh, yeah.
There's this one therapist on my For You page. I'm like, leave me alone. I've said I'm not interested so many times. He keeps popping up. No. He's like, five signs you're secure in your relationship. Five red flags, five green flags. I'm like, sir, please. But I think Girlfriends is made at a time where you didn't have so much access to people's relationship input.
Yeah, true. We do have a lot of it now, yeah.
You can't escape it. You hear about it every day. We're talking about it right now. There's a whole show like Love Island. Like, back then it was just, okay, I talk about it with my girlfriends because...
And then watch Girlfriends.
And then you watch Girlfriends. Maybe that's it. But now there is just so much... talk about it. Mm-hmm. And in a certain like Girlfriends, the comment that that man made to her at the time was obviously normal. It was even like, oh my gosh, he wants to show me off, yay, like an Oscar award or something like that. So it just made me wonder, like, what is there, is there a general approach of wanting to show off the person that you have to other people because it's now under your ownership? Mm-hmm. And it also reminded me of this snippet of, I don't know if it was Keeping Up the Kardashians or just like a general video about with Kim and Kanye in it. This is when they were still together, and she was wearing like an outfit for like a shoot that he wasn't happy with, and people were like, didn't he know what he was getting himself into when he married her? But that's expectation of this like amazing woman that is out there, and I just want to be able to acquire her so mm-hmm. that this thing can be in my possession, and if I get a chance, I'm going to try and manipulate her and kind of take the shine of her because mm-hmm. she belongs to me. It's just something I think about. But that's what that reminded me of in Girlfriends. That's what the thing with Paige and Jackson, whatever, reminded me of. It's like he just wants to acquire this thing. He doesn't even consider the fact that this thing might not want to be owned or associated with him.
Right. She might not feel the same. She might not find you attractive. She might not be interested. Mm. I don't know how this does not come across some guys' minds.
I mean, I don't think it would come across their minds because they don't, it's not conscious. Like, a lot of it is subconscious. Like, even things like so much injustice in this world is subconscious. Even with the Roe v. Wade thing as well, like, people aren't like saying, oh, I just hate women having a choice over their bodies or whatever. That conclusion is only drawn when people start thinking critically and they think maybe you just don't really value women in this way, blah blah blah, and therefore here's my answer. But it's like, I'm not in active pursuit of oppressing women. Mm-hmm. My behavior is just so socialized and so subconscious that the actions I do repress them, but it's never intentional. Like systematic racism, like I'm not out here trying to stop black kids from getting an education,
right?
But the way I approach life and the way I treat black kids in the educational system without even knowing is oppressing them in ways I can never understand, because it's like, it's almost out of your control. It's subconscious, and people don't give enough credit to the subconscious. Mm. And I think the same thing goes for relationships. Like the way you're raised, the way you're socialized is to see women in a certain way. And now you navigate your relationship in this certain way, but you're like, but I'm not oppressing my girlfriend on purpose. Yeah, but you're doing it subconsciously.
Right.
And I'm trying to let you know that, but you're out here denying it. And I saw a really stupid video of some man being like, men don't oppress women. Do you think we go outside all day and think, oh, I need to oppress my girlfriend when I'm making money and I think I'm going to go home and tell her to cook because she has to be oppressed? It's like, right. No, why would you do that anyway? That's true madness. Like, if you're making a mission to hurt somebody, you're literally not okay in the head.
Yeah.
But to do it without intention, that's the issue. And you try to open people's eyes to, like, oh, you're doing this thing without realizing it's damaging, because it's beyond, like, practical. It is subconscious, like, beneath the surface. That's when they start to feel attacked, because they start to think, well, what am I doing that's out of my control? Surely I'm in control over the way I live my life. But the truth is that you're not. But you don't want to accept that.
You don't want to accept the truth.
Yeah.
The truth hurts.
But it sets you free.
Oh, come on. Wow. Guys, we hope that you have enjoyed this episode. Our first episode back.
Come on.
Oh my gosh, it feels so good to be back. It does. We hope to have many, many more episodes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we're looking, hopefully having more guests on.
Yeah.
Let us know which type of people you'd like us to reach out to, any episode ideas. We would love, love, love to hear from you guys. Yeah. Keep it coming.
Keep it coming. Thank you guys for listening to our podcast. I have been Adephala.
And it's been your girl Joyce.
Bye.
Lovely job, boy.